This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we are all traveling this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me on Facebook at facebook.com/botfpodcast, on Instagram at botfpodcast, or you can email me jenna@botfpodcast.com. And today we are here with Jen Eichenhorst. I'm really excited. We've connected through the Christian Podcasters Association. Her story is amazing. Obviously, faithfulness is something that I really am digging into, trying to figure out, passing that wisdom on to you. And her story is one of the most beautiful faithfulness stories that I've seen. And it's still going, which is even more exciting. So Jen, why don't you tell us a little bit about your ministry and how it came to be?
Thank you so much for having me. Well, Accidental Hope is a podcast. It's not a technical ministry, but I believe it's my life calling now. It was after a serious accident that I had in 2016 that involved a fatality. So I want to preface that my story is very sensitive to a lot of people. And so if you've ever lost someone, I just want you to know how sorry my heart goes out to all those who have lost someone, a loved one, in a car accident. But that's where my story begins. I am on a regular day. I had an accident with a motorcyclist. He came from my left and I didn't see him. And unfortunately, 2 days later, he lost his life to his injuries from that accident. And so a very, very, I want to just say, dark moment in my life where very quickly all of life changed. And the reason why the ministry became is because there are just so few resources for people like me. In fact, I could find none. And talking with a counselor, crying out, saying, this is 2016. Why does no one talk about this? And how does this even happen? He looked at me and said, well, maybe now there could be. So that's kind of where the seed was planted. I found myself where another person like myself reached out to me, and suddenly it was almost like a lifeline. They were literally like an angel. God answered a prayer with that person reaching out to me. It was a miracle how it evolved. It was my own neighbor, my neighbor of 2 years. And one day when we were just about to move, I finally opened my heart to say, hey, we're moving, and why? And that's when it was brought to my attention that when he was in his 40s, he had an accident like mine, that the first year was the hardest. He prayed over me. He cried with me. And this man was now, it had been 18 years since his accident, and he literally wept with me. So I realized in that moment, one, how God answers prayers in miraculous ways. I can't make that up. And two, how good it felt to connect with someone who understood everything that I was battling internally. And it gave me hope again. And so Accidental Hope was born more like a year later. But from that moment, I began to realize that there was power in my testimony, sharing with other people so that other people would come forward. And there was so much healing in that. That's really kind of how it got started. I wanted to reach people who have accidentally killed or hurt someone else, which is, it kind of leaves you like, pick your jaw up. Like, no one does that. Like, who does that? But that's my ministry.
I was saying this a little bit before in our pre-interview chat, but just talking with other people who I was telling a little bit about the why behind Accidental Hope, and they're like, that's an interesting title. Tell us about that. Why did it come to be? And I told them a little bit of your story, and they were just completely amazed at your ability to move past yourself and think about other people. That was what you said, the seed planting. So then where did it go from there? How did you connect with other people if they're so hard to find because they're hiding?
Yeah, I mean, the natural intent is it's very shameful. And if you operate from that place, it's almost like it's operating from an open wound. It's something, this is a lifelong suffering, Jenna, but it's a lifelong enduring. Like, God gives you faith to endure. It's not like it's just healed and fixed. It's a place of enduring where God walks with me every day. So, you know, it really by miracle, like I said, I was getting ready to move when I met Johnny. I mean, I knew Johnny, But I knew Johnny, like, hey, can we borrow some eggs? And, you know, he helped my husband change a tire once. You know, you know what I'm saying? It was not, hey, let's sit down and talk about this accident that killed an innocent person. I mean, you know, it's not something that you can even bring up in day-to-day conversation without kind of gut-punching people. It's not something that you can just bring up. So God really brought other people. One of the ways was I joined a Facebook group, and this is, I laugh, but I joined a Facebook group for people who were suffering from anxiety from car accidents because I was dealing with that. And I thought, oh, I'll join this to kind of see other people. Well, I quickly realized that it was a place where people could complain about people who hit them. You know, one day this one person wrote, has anyone on here besides me been the person responsible for an accident and they passed away as a result of the accident? This was like just a post in this anxiety group. I immediately commented like, oh my gosh, me, you know, you're not alone. Oh my gosh, you know, where are you? And we kind of did a side message and became friends. And you're not going to believe this, but I swear to you, our accidents were on the exact same day. Hers was involving she hydroplaned involving a child, and mine was with a motorcyclist, but our accidents were on the very same day. And my heart just immediately had like a kindred spirit, like a soul that understood in a different level the battles of depression and anxiety and shame and guilt. And so really the people who I've connected with are a way of total complete miracle. You know, sometimes people will be like, hey, this just happened to a friend of a friend. Can you reach out to them? Oh my gosh, you know, I just heard of this. Especially once I made it clear that this was now my life's work. When I first was going through counseling, I wanted to help everybody. So every time I would hear of an accident in town, because this happens every day, you really hear of them every day, and you immediately are just heartbroken for the family who just lost a loved one, and you're immediately angry with whoever the driver was. What were they doing? And that's very normal. In fact, I experienced those same feelings and thoughts of anger and frustration and judgment, and then now I am one. And so we call ourselves caddies, and it's CADI, causing accidental death or injury. And this is a thing. This is a group of people who are hurting in this world. Thousands and thousands of people who we never think about other than the headlines of Facebook or the, news reports, you know, fatal crash. And then we never think about them again. But people like myself are there suffering in silence with their guilt, their shame, and they're everyday people. There's a lot more accidents that happen by accident, truly accident, than there are phones involved or intoxication, things like that. They're just regular everyday people who have tragic accidents. And we still have all the same feelings. We still experience all the same anger, frustration. So that's really how it was born. And I'm grateful for the people who I have made connections with all over the world. And I've heard from people from India and United Kingdom and Canada and Peru, where I have to use Google Translate to talk to them. But God is so faithful to connect us, and all of us can finish each other's sentences. We have the same symptoms of things that we are dealing with and struggling through. It's really remarkable. It's our deepest secrets of what we internalize. We all can relate to them. We're all feeling them. Universal. Gender, age, religion, doesn't matter. And then even people who've had accidents. Mine is 3 years, 8 months. But I hear from people, their accident was 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and they secretly still deal with it every day. Same thoughts.
It reminds me of how Satan tries to get us to feel like we're alone and shut ourselves up and never admit it. And this is for anything. Like if you're having mom guilt or if you're having anger issues that you're just hiding in there, any way that it could cause you to basically eat yourself alive.
Or any trauma. Yeah. Any trauma where you feel... Satan has no new tricks, right? And so he does try to isolate you. And I think in my accident, that was the first time I kind of doubted the goodness of God for a little while. And I had to really wrestle with the maturing of my faith. It's putting something so big that is bigger than you or me. It's bigger than anything that we can comprehend. And you're putting it in his hands and saying, your word says that you will make beauty from ashes. And when you're going through it in the middle of it, you're like, Lord, there's no way. I mean, I was still crying out to him going, God, your word says that you can make beauty from ashes, but how? In the world, can this ever be beauty from ashes? How can I ever come on the other side of this and it be okay? And now I can see that and I can say, yes, he does. The accident itself will never be. That grief and loss from the specific thing of how the enemy, I don't believe that it was God's will for that day. I don't believe it was God's will to cause the death of, his name was David, in that way. I don't think it was God's will for my life to inflict such pain on another family and my own family and myself. I believe that I have an enemy and we are in a fallen world. But I do believe that God said, she can handle this. His children who are now living their life without their father are going to be stronger, that, you know, their faith and their testimony as I grow, my faith and my testimony and my marriage or whatever, that is the good and the beauty that can come from it. And paying it forward is part of the healing, but it's also about how God makes beauty from ashes, helping the next person who has their accident, reaching out to them saying, hey, don't give up. It's going to be okay. God still loves you. You are forgiven. You know, all those, you can experience joy in the fullness of life despite your pain or despite the circumstance. That is where God has made something beautiful out of something so broken.
How long did it take for that flip to switch where you finally were starting to see where God was creating something out of it?
Well, what's funny is, and this is not funny, but it's very interesting. So about 6 weeks after my accident, might have been 2 months after my accident, I had secretly got back on Facebook, but I would get on and then I would, you know, put my profile. Cause I mean, I had people that tried to tell me what a horrible person I was through social media, which is normal and it's fine. There's anger and grief. That's their stage. And I don't hold it against them. I mean, how would I react? I'd like to say I'd have righteous anger if something happened to my loved one, but we're all human. I had to, you know, go off of that, but I had snuck on Facebook for a few minutes, you know, I'd activate it and deactivate it when I was still waiting for my grand jury. You know, I had to go through the whole legal process too. That's like a whole layer of conversation. But I saw that there was this headline of this tragic accident that had happened in Waco, which now I live in Waco. At the time, I didn't live in Waco. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to help this person. So I call my counselor and I find out where the young man, his pastor, and I was like trying to tell my counselor, like, I'm going to try and get in touch with this other person who had this accident because the news said that it was this woman in an SUV and her children were in the car. And I was like, oh, I identify with that because my children were in the car with me. And I wanted to help that other mama so that we're just not alone. And I'm sure my counselor, I love him, Dr. Knox. He was just like, oh yeah, you know, but you can't help anyone when you're still in an open wound state. So he just nodded. You know, I wanted to help at that point, but it would have probably not been healthy. You don't want to operate from that open wound place. You want to be at a place of healing. I think it kind of started organically right before the first anniversary of the accident. So it took a while. The first 4 months were just shock and grief, just survival mode, where every part of life literally changed. I mean, my identity, because, you know, I'm a teacher and I'm a mom and I'm a wife. Well, when you're so broken, I couldn't behave the same ways as I would as a mother. I was suffering really deep depression. I was overtaken with fear and anxiety. I had what's called moral injury, where I literally felt like I was not a good person anymore. And that how could I ever be a good person because I'm now labeled. I am this accidental killer. And that just made me nauseous and hate myself. So everything about life felt over. That's what the enemy wanted me to believe, you know. So I had to work my way back to a place of discovering who God says I am and coming through that and realizing that through some series of events, but God continued to answer prayers and miracles were still happening. And I was like, wait, you know, God, you can still use me. Like, I still have a hope and a purpose. There's still a plan. And so it was kind of unfolding. And so I would say about 8 months or so after the accident, I did video testimony where I just got on Facebook and I told my 2-minute elevator testimony. And I said, if you know anyone that's been through this, tell me how to reach them or give them my information. And that's kind of how it started. But I had to get to a place of where I was on the right road before God would give me a ministry. I had to be at a certain place of healing and seeing him work. And that's what he's doing slowly but surely. And I consider it an honor and a privilege to reach out to other people and say, hey, it's going to be okay. And no matter what, nothing can separate you from the love of God. And if God is love, then he did not choose for you to hurt this person to teach you a lesson. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's against his nature. So I consider that an honor and privilege. So I would say about 8 months to 11 months before this became a thing.
So you kind of started talking about this. Faithfulness, I am finding in my endeavor to understand it, is kind of a two-way street. Obviously, God is always faithful to us no matter what we do, no matter where we are in life, no matter how many times we break a promise or make a mistake, he's always faithful. But we are also, even though we are imperfect, we are also responsible to act in faithfulness toward him as well. So your steps of faithfulness to God are being so brave and getting on Facebook and doing that. How did people react to that?
They really embraced it, which I was shocked. And what had happened was my husband and I were youth ministers a long time ago. And one of our boys that we ministered to had a brother who passed away on a motorcycle accident. He was hit by another driver. And so I was watching Facebook and these boys were hurt and talking about this, quote, other driver. And I know they weren't talking about me and I don't know the circumstances behind that accident, obviously, you know, but I took it on as me. And so I went on there to really tell our boys, guys, this is me. This is the one that you know, and I'm the person that you love and care about. And I'm that same person to another family. And how much heartbreak. It was very hard, but I wanted to give them comfort. It was like just this big elephant in the room, you know, to see the comments. And of course, I'm very sad for who we had lost, but I also wanted to tell them, like, this is me and this is what I'm dealing with. And I've thought about this accident every single day since the moment it happened. I cried every day for this family and prayed every day for his children more than my own at that point. You know what I mean? I mean, it was just on my every thought. And I wanted to tell them what was happening and I didn't know how to help other people. And I really don't know why I did. It was probably very impulsive, but through that, it got shared and people commented. And I ended up doing an interview for The New Yorker called The Shame and Sorrow of an Accidental Killer. For The New Yorker magazine, the journalist called me and I did an interview. I know that was a total God thing too. And then, you know, it just opened a whole world of conversation that this really does happen every day. I mean, Matthew Broderick, he's an accidental killer like myself, a caddy. I mean, it really stalled his complete career. He went into hiding. And 30 years later, there's still hate groups and Facebook pages dedicated to the hate towards him and Jennifer Grey because they were involved in this accident. It's something that sometimes maybe people even justify. And I just was like, you know, the more we stay in shame and bondage, the more the enemy wins in this. So it's just like anyone who's that brave person that steps into kind of a taboo subject, you know. And I was like, Lord, I'm just this little teacher from Texas and mom and wife. And this is not the ministry that I thought I would have someday. You know, I work with at-risk youth. You know, my daughters have Chiari malformation. So I thought, surely that might be my ministry someday. Work with young moms who have children with medical conditions. No, would have never picked this, but it is so healing when I pick up the phone or send out a message to another person and I say, I know the nightmares that you have. I know the lies that get whispered in your ear. And I want you to know that God's word says you are still loved, adored. You are worthy and you are enough. And everything can be forgiven. The person who lost their life that day, if they are in heaven, they forgave you the moment they met Jesus. And, you know, I've even heard from other moms who've had, you know, abortions, and to tell them your baby is in the arms of Jesus and you are forgiven. And what every time I speak that to someone else, I'm also speaking it to myself. Because like I said, this is the faith to endure. This doesn't go away. I don't just wake up someday and this accident ever happened. It is a part of my life. It's a part of my circumstance, but it didn't label me. I know that now, but I didn't for a long time.
I think your story about the New Yorker, it's a huge testament to how our hope as Christians really doesn't make sense. It gets the attention of the world when we do it well, so much so that people on the whole other side of the country want to talk to you about it. Like that's a huge, amazing story.
It's crazy. And there is a website, there is a resource. It's called accidentalimpacts.org. And the woman who, her name is Dr. Marianne Gray, she runs that site and she is our pioneer. So she is like she worked in the psychology department for UCLA. She's done a TED Talk. And she is a caddy and she coined that term. And so she's a licensed doctor who studied psychology, and her accident was devastating. And so she's now devoted her life's work to just studying how this changes the brain. What I'm finding is our military, it's very close to what a soldier would describe as PTSD from war and moral injury and all these things. But here I am, this everyday mom who my trauma happened in a car. And you can't escape cars. You know, I face my trauma every day. Got a 17-year-old and a 16-year-old. Like them driving, that's my trauma, and I have to face that. It's something continuously that you lay down and trust God with, because the enemy wants to whisper, like, something happens to them, you know, you deserve it. You have to rebuke that. Whatever comes up in I think the enemy knows, you know, those secrets that we haven't really brought up. So when something bad does happen, immediately there's those whispers to try and use that against you. And you have to just know that that is a lie from the enemy. Know your shepherd's voice. I had to get really good about knowing God's voice versus what was a tactic of the enemy. God did that, and it's not me. I'm just, like I said, little small town Texas, and I have this little podcast, but I'm grateful that there are a couple resources, and the more that we grow and the more that we can get attention, then people can study it, because there are still so many people who live in that shame and suffer greatly.
So you talk a lot about your identity and how it's shifted. Can you tell us a little bit about how you identified yourself, how you defined your identity before the accident and now?
Yeah, well, and that was part of the problem. Like I would have told you, you know, I had been a Christian for almost 30 years. I felt pretty solid in knowing who I was. I was 36 when the accident happened. But I wrap my identity in, well, I'm a wife of a coach and I'm a good mom. I have four children. I'm a teacher. I use that as part of labeling who I was. I'm a good person. But really, your identity is who Christ is in you. And so when you're going through that trauma, I mean, think about the trauma of like a divorce. You identify as like your identity is that wife, this picture perfect, you know, like we're a wife and a family. Well, your identity is shaken when that divorce happens, right? Because you're like, whoa, because that's not your true identity. Your identity is only on what God says it is. I had to really go back to, well, God's word says that I am his masterpiece. And he says that I am a daughter of a king, and that I am loved, adored. I am the apple of his eye. I am his workmanship. So parts of me are his. Therefore, I can't hate myself, or I'm hating God and who he made me to be. So I have to try to become more Christ-like. And that's the more I do that, the more I walk in my true identity. Because all the other things are not eternal. But anything that is of God it's going to be the same no matter what happens around you. It's kind of like that orbit. I think about that picture of if you're in the center and you're centered in God, anything could just chaos can ensue around you, but you're still grounded. You know, it can float around whatever's happening. When that was happening, when I was walking through that, I was depressed where I didn't get out of bed. I didn't sign the folders. I didn't make the dinners. I could barely get out of bed. I didn't want to drive to the events. Anything that my children and my family saw me before, I was a shell of that person for a little while. And I was healing and I was trying to find my way back. As much as I was angry with God for allowing it to happen, He was my only hope. I would still cry out to Him, even though sometimes I was very angry with Him allowing me to hurt someone else and to hurt my own family and to hurt myself. And so it was a very interesting time, but I did fight my way back. I did listen to the voice of God, and hope didn't die in me, but it really, it felt like that because everything literally was crumbling around me, but He was still there. Your identity, all the things that we kind of build ourselves in the moment, some of those things can disappear on earth. Maybe not in heaven, but they can disappear on earth. And so what is eternal is what your true identity is. As you walk in the fullness of who Christ made you to be, you fulfill that and then you know that is who you are. That is your identity. Like, so if you walk in your gifting, if the more you pursue Him, you know, we're all facets of Him. Every person who has their gifting, you're a facet of the Lord. Your children, whether you have children or not, that's not your identity because children can pass away or something can happen. Life can change. Your career could change. People are experiencing that right now with COVID. If you've wrapped your identity in this career or this walk to fame, I mean, everything is changing our dynamic of priorities and weight. I thought I was going to do this because none of those are eternal. And if you wrap your identity in those things, then you are probably really struggling right now with uncertainty. But if you're still grounded in who Christ made you to be, then all these things happening around you can happen, but you're still grounded in the Lord. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things. I didn't know that I had that identity issue until I realized I have a real identity crisis going on, but God is faithful.
I feel like you just summed up in 3 minutes something I've been trying to explain for like a month.
I mean, literally, if I could tell you, just be completely honest with you, when the accident happened, I was like, well, I'm not a good person anymore. It doesn't matter what I've ever done in this entire 36 years on life. Everyone will only know me as this person who took an innocent person's life. You know, David was a completely innocent, good man who had children. He didn't deserve what happened that day. I will always think about that. Nothing changes that. So if I'm not a good person, but even though I am, because your good works don't matter. Guys, like the gospel came alive. Your good works don't matter because there is nothing that I can do to replace what happened. There's nothing that could earn my way into heaven. There's nothing that I could do or say or speak or whatever to atone for that. The only thing that makes sense is that God did the work for me because we can't do it. All those other things can pass away. They can change and just a blink, but the fullness of who God made you to be, whether that's in knowledge or in mercy or in hospitality or power of prayer or whatever gifting that God has given you, that doesn't pass away. That's probably what's going to be magnified in times of trauma. The other labels are kind of like just bonus. The other things are just icing on the cake. My 4 beautiful children, my husband of almost 19 years, all of that is just icing on the cake. God's abundance of blessing, but that doesn't make who I am. And so, you know, speaking to young moms out there, make sure your identity is grounded in the Lord and really seeking Him and who He made you to be, because the mundane of the mama with all the little kids, that's why we fall into that depression. You know, that's why we can fall into that feeling trapped, especially when your little ones are little and you feel like, just need a space, please stop touching me, you know, or whatever season you're in. You know, I lived it. I know what you're feeling, mama. It's going to be okay.
I love that. And I think that's a great segue into, you chose 2 Timothy 1:7 for your closeout verse. Tell me more about that.
Well, if anyone studies the Enneagram, I am an Enneagram 6, which, you know, I always was kind of someone who operated in fear, and anything that made me afraid made me also angry. I never wanted anything to have power over me, so I would often do things that made me afraid, and I parented out of fear. Not good. Nothing ever good comes out of that. So 2 Timothy says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind." The reason why that verse speaks so much to me is because there's a lot of anxiety with my struggles in the car, allowing my children to go in the car, walking on streets, bicycling, anything to do with being out in the open. You feel like something terrible is just about to happen because I don't even believe in karma, but you feel it, you know? So operating out of fear and knowing that that is a lie from the enemy, that God gave me the power and authority over my anxiety. So I can rebuke that thought and replace it with God's truth. I can come to him and pray on a verse until my pulse settles down to where my breathing returns to normal. That God is love, that he is not some cruel God who's playing this master thing of causing chaos. That's the enemy. God is love, and God loves us, and he's going to walk us through it. He's going to let us find our healing. He wants us to be healed. He wants us to walk in freedom and joy and fullness. He does not want us to be bound. He also gave me a sound mind where I don't have to, I guess, succumb to, like, a lot of us have trouble with insomnia and nightmares, recurring dreams of the accident, hallucinations, like I said, deep depression, the moral injury, suicidal ideation. This is 100% of people around the world have these symptoms after an accident like mine. Many people struggle with these things. God gave us, he wants us to have a sound mind. He wants us to have that peace, to be able to walk in that. And so whenever I start to feel it, which is, you know, right now, are the kids going back to school? Are they not going back to school? Do you wear the mask? Do you not wear the mask? What's happening in our streets? So I just go back to, he did not give me a spirit of fear. I have fear in my spirit. I need to do a heart check. What's really going on? If I do not feel loved, or I'm not sharing love, what's really going on? What's the root of what's happening? If I'm doubting God, he gave me that power of authority over my life with his word. So it's really a great verse. It covers a lot of things, and it's everything that I need often.
Thank you so much for taking your time. I know with 4 kids, how taking an hour of your day can be a little overwhelming. And just thank you for being brave. I know that sharing your story is not one you necessarily want to do or want to relive all the time, but just the hope that you have. I know it gives me more courage just hearing that you've been through that. You can still see God's faithfulness. You can still feel loved. You can still find an anchored identity. And anyone who's been through a traumatic event or a traumatic injury that they have caused, you know, they can find forgiveness too. And I know it's hard from both ends. I'm not trying to make it small, like you're forgiven, move on. That's not what I'm saying. But to see it in real life, to see your faithfulness to God, to see how God stayed faithful to you, showered his love on you, proven that we as Christians have a hope and a peace beyond all understanding. Just hearing the story gives me courage to keep doing my thing too. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that message. Absolutely.
2 Timothy 1:7, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind."
This has been episode 60 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast entitled Finding Hope and Faithfulness After an Inconceivable Accident with Jen Eichenhurst. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/60. You can find us on social media at Facebook or Instagram.